welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here.
Hi, everyone.
And we're back.
This is Nicole Sachs, and you've reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs, and obviously...
Lisa.
Lisa Eisenpresser, who is in a goofy mood and is making me off my game. Okay. All right. We're getting serious. We're actually here to talk about something that is not a joke. You have heard me on several occasions tell you that at some point, tease for you that we were going to come and talk about the move, the dreaded move. Yes.
I'm laughing because we have really talked about it, like the move, capital T, yeah. Capital M.
Well, it's become iconic in its misery and personal emotional destruction. So we're here to talk about it because it actually has led to really insightful conversations that we've needed to have with each other and for ourselves on the ways in which we deal with stressful situations and the ways in which when you live through something, let's call it traumatic, low T traumatic, but medium T traumatic, what you can really learn from it, because there's really no point in dealing with something that difficult and then not bringing the lesson forth. And so as we were talking about it, we really thought this would make a good podcast.
Really, mostly because the move taught us so much about how we can use this metaphor for TMS mindset. You know, we always want to check ourselves a little bit before platforming something personal. I especially, just as a producer, like to make sure that something is not just important in the moment, but and taking on an outsized meaning, you know, for me personally or for you personally, but that in the rear view, as it settles and we get some distance from it, that there are in fact lessons that we can share with others that will help them, even if they're not in a situation that is directly analogous to this one.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure of all of you guys out there listening, there will be some percentage of people that have to deal with moving house, which I think our friend was saying to us is up there with like death and divorce in terms of life stressors.
Moving,
because it brings up so much, not only about acclimating to a new environment, but about the physicality of it, and also the emotionality of packing potentially, if you or me, everything you own.
After you've gotten rid of everything you thought you needed.
After
that.
Which
is a great metaphor as well, I think.
True.
We don't need what we think we need. And we go through all of these things and you begin to see that all of the baggage that you collect on your journey is...
Pun intended.
Is often very meaningless when you start to do an inventory of it. It's often things that you can just light a match and never look back again.
Okay, so actually that even makes my point even more saliently. So once you've culled everything that you realize is meaningless, the gold nuggets, the gems that you keep, whether for sentimental reasons, the things that spark joy, yes. They are important to you. They're part of you. And there is such a vulnerability that I was not expecting, that I think came from the negative experience we had, of putting that in someone else's hands. It's like handing someone your baby and being like, okay, see you in a week and a half, you know, as it travels across the entire country. And I'm not trying to be too precious about it. It hit me. It hit me a little unexpectedly how vulnerable that sounded, if that felt, and how everything that transpired was grist for the mill in terms of learning lessons, because of it actually became an emotional experience. I thought it was just going to be like a very transactional experience that became an emotional experience. So maybe we're being too vague. Do you want to like tell the story a little bit of what happened and why we think it's worthy of a podcast?
Yeah, I think we've buried the lead a little bit. So this will be a story about what it feels like to get scammed, but it will also be a story about how we tend to participate in that. And if we really look at things as they unfold and don't fall into too easy definitions of what it means to be a victim.
Yes.
That we can take back our agency at many points along the way, even when something is being perpetrated against us. And we can see why we do the things that we do And in the same way that we use journal speak as a tool for looking inside and discovering these truths of what causes us to behave the way we do, what are the needs beneath our behaviors, so too can we use even something like, quote unquote, the move.
The move.
To teach us all sorts of things about why we make the choices that we do.
Yes. And I love the concept of looking at our role in things and how we participate in our own misery and in our own evolution and in everything that we do, instead of feeling like everything's happening to us, which is also a great metaphor for all of this work, because people doing this work have been giving away their power forever to doctors, to medications, to treatments, to diagnoses. And then finally, with mixed feelings, taking back the reins, which comes with great agency, but also great responsibility, and sometimes a really heavy feeling of like, shit, now it's on me. Yes. And that's just, it's really, it tracks with owning our part in our challenging situation.
Yes. So what we hope to spark for you when you listen to this story and you listen to us discuss it, and we've certainly not rehearsed this, is that you will be able to find something in your own life that, that feels similar, where you have perhaps given up your agency, written yourself into the narrative as a victim, and the next time you encounter that situation, you'll be able to pause and get some distance from it and rewrite that narrative and make decisions that may be harder in the moment, but really do give you back your power.
Yes. I love it. And that's, it's so well said. And that is exactly what we're going for. So let me just not bury the lead and tell a little bit of the details, which are, you know, on their face, a little bit uninteresting, because they're just what happened.
The story is the story.
The story is the story.
The content's the content. It's never, I mean, this is what you always say about couples therapy too, that, you know, people have their stories, people have their content. It's never that. It's really about digging underneath and looking at, you know, what are the needs?
Yes. Okay. So what happened was I had to move from the East Coast to the West Coast, the longest haul that you can in the United States of America. And so, unless you're going to Alaska or Hawaii. And so I got one estimate that was rather high, and it was incredibly well done and precise. And I thought, that seems really high. And so I called a different company. And at the very end of this podcast, Lisa and I decided, just as a PSA, we actually are going to mention the name of the company. And the reason we're going to do that is because it truly was a capital S scam. And we don't want anybody to potentially use that company. But I hired a different company for a far lower price, a price that I should have known was too low for the job, a price that was the, if it's too good to be true, it probably / definitely is kind of price. And I did what I do, which is I ignored red flags because I wanted to, for lack of a better phrasing, to see the best in people, to decide that people were honorable if they said they were honorable. But I have to admit, even in this moment, that sounds a little bit too
high-minded
and like and self-congratulatory. Like, it's really, it's because I didn't feel like dealing with my intuition that said, this doesn't feel 100% right, because there were other things I wanted to do, like enjoy my summer, like dissociate, like not deal with what was in front of me, because I felt like everything was so big between moving to California and getting Oliver ready for his freshman year of college and acclimate Charlotte and all the things I had to do for my little one, who's a 10th grader, and continue to carry this business with Lisa and all the things we have to do for that. And I'm writing a book. And when you say all of it in one mouthful, it's a fucking lot. And instead of slowing down and being more mature and saying, okay, well, that's fine. You've got a lot going on, but this is an important one. And this is literally everything you own after you've thrown away all the excess baggage. And I didn't do that. I decided that it would be okay, even though I was not looking at the line items, meaning the things that should have told me it's not going to be okay. And it led to a lot of stress. So Lisa, why don't you? I don't even know how much we want to include here in terms of details.
Just suffice it to say, it's a nasty business in general. It does not just this one company. What we've come to find out, it's it's fairly or unfortunately too standard in this industry to have this kind of scam perpetrated on people. But what happens is you come in through a door, one door, they give you a price, then they call you a few days before the move where people most likely can't do anything about it anyway.
Right.
You know, you've packed your house, you've either leased it or sold it or whatever you're going to do.
You have to get out.
somebody else is waiting on the other end to get in. And someone will call and they will say, oh, whoa, 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 wait a minute. You know, the last people you spoke to obviously didn't do as thorough a job as I do. That's why they bring me in, because I'm an expert.
Customer at, care. You
know, quality control.
Right, right. You're right. Quality control.
And, you know, wait a minute. You have a couch?
Right.
Oh, I mean, well, that
he said a sofa,
game,
but it's a couch.
That changes the game. So they'll, you know, some ridiculous things like where they'll, you know, revise the quote. And all of a sudden, you're in for 50% more.
Yeah, I was going to say, revise the quote, i.e. double the estimate.
Right. Well, we're not there yet. So first, they incrementally bring you up. So it's about 50% more. Send us this. And I promise that you're lucky that you spoke with me today, because now you're going to get the right size truck instead of a too small truck. And
you would have been screwed.
Yeah, so I'm saving you. Look at it that way. So, you know, you write the check. And then the day of the move comes and an entirely
different company
with a different truck, with a too small truck to go across the country arrives, and they are merely the movers, and they say, oh well, we're not those guys, those guys are brokers, we are the ones actually doing the jobs, whatever you gave them, I'm sorry you did, but has nothing to do with us, and actually you can only use this many cubic feet in
the whole truck.
And here's, you know, what we can do. And we'll try to keep it there, but it looks like a lot more. And
then the estimate gets higher. Yeah.
So then you're in for double
or even more
than where your original estimate was. And it's much more like the first estimate you got from the company that you thought was way too much.
Oh, and then another really precious point is that they say, we're not actually moving you across the country. We're going to fill this truck, take it to a warehouse, load it onto an 18-wheeler and wait for a driver to be assigned. The whole thing feels, of course, any scam makes you feel vulnerable and deceived, but it just feels so unsafe. I really have to say, use that word.
And by that point, you're desperate, and you've also invested so much money in it that you can't get out. So you've ignored your instincts.
And now you can't even.
At this point.
Not ignored, like you can't change, because they have you where they want you.
You're in too deep.
Yeah.
And you do feel such a mixture of emotions, from
rage
to shame.
Right.
You're forced to confront like why you would have made this choice in the first place, which are usually based on needs that you don't really want to look at, needs for safety that you don't really want to accept that you had.
Right.
And you have to just keep sort of going along, and you have to do it in a way that is befriending.
Right. You have to basically befriend your abuser, because now this person who has come in and really truly made you feel violated, you actually have to kiss their ass, because you don't want them to, you know, spit in your soup. You want your stuff to make it across the country. So what ended up happening, because I don't want to take too long with this, is that they did load us up, and Lisa and I had to, you know, be like super nice all day. And it was like really difficult and degrading in a sense. And then once they left, because we hadn't even gotten the name of that company until that morning, because it was the bait and switch of the broker and then the mover, we looked up the reviews of this mover, and it's like, if there could be a bottom of the toilet, if there could be
fewer than one star.
Right. If there could be a Yelp review that was like negative 10 stars and legal action, that would be
that's what we were dealing
with. And so it just began this, I'd say, 3 week long from that point.
Hostage situation.
Panic attack.
And a hostage situation. I mean, they have all your stuff. You don't know where they are. We also idiotically did not air tag or do anything to track.
I didn't. I mean, like Lisa, you could say we, and that's generous and kind of you, but this goes into my lesson of what I really want to share with you guys, and I want you to learn for yourselves in any way that you're relating to this. Doesn't have to be a move. It could be literally anything that you're involved in your life, where when you ignore your best instincts, and in addition, you really don't take the actionable steps that are smart and thoughtful, like air tagging it, like putting my address on every one of my boxes, like counting every single box. It's like embarrassing. I probably shouldn't be saying all these things, but you know, the truth is, I said to Lisa throughout this entire experience, I already feel the depth of the lessons I am learning from this and the inconvenience. Should this not go totally south and they throw my stuff over, you know, a mountain cliff, will be worth, the lessons will be worth the discomfort, because I need, in certain ways, I'm a huge grown-up in certain ways. I mean, I've done this work for 20 years. I'm a good mom and all that. In certain ways, I need to be more of a grown-up. I need to do right. these things that are inconvenient, right. that are uncomfortable,
right.
that involve asking for help, which is not a great strong suit of mine. And I also want to just say, in terms of like, because I want to move into the more complex conversation about this move, I want to say, just so people aren't at the edge of their seat or they're not distracted, it turned out okay. It turned out okay in that my things arrived. There were bumps and bruises a little bit, but I don't think anything more than a normal move. And I have
I mean, and you also had the luxury of not needing it. I mean, it came weeks and weeks late.
It came weeks and weeks late. I was able to stay at Lisa's.
Pieces broken, pieces missing, but nothing tragic in the end compared to the stories that we heard of other people's misfortunes.
Yes.
So that's really not so much the point. I think, you know, what happened and what we can start to unpack now, no pun intended, is more along the lines of the dynamics that occur. So people get involved. You have to tell people. You have to tell your friends what's happening. Everyone wants to know. And everyone's like, well, why did you make those choices? And mm-hmm. people judge you. And they think to themselves, rather self-satisfied and smugly, well, I never would have made that choice. I mean, well, didn't you think to Google them before you hired them? And all sorts of, you know, very rational responses. But it kind of makes you throw the second arrow and self-flagellate in ways.
Maybe you.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, I definitely
yeah,
felt.
Let's see, but that's...
I felt on top of being scammed, I felt very foolish, and I felt a bit judged and, yes, supported, because everybody's rooting for you to get out of it, but you don't feel like... Everyone...
See, yeah, that wasn't my experience, and I'll tell you why. Because of the bait and switch, we couldn't have Googled. So I didn't actually feel that ashamed of the not doing the research, because I did do the research on the first company, which actually doesn't have horrible reviews, or at least certainly not uniformly. But it's for me, I guess, you know, it's interesting that Lisa brings that up, because everybody has their own lessons from whatever it is that they lived through. And Lisa lived through it completely. Even though it was my physical stuff, she was as invested, if not more, actually, to her detriment in the stress of it all.
Right. And we also parted ways on what we thought was happening in the, you know, during the time that we couldn't hear from any of them, where we didn't know.
Right. More faith.
We didn't know
that
where
everything was going to be fun.
So, you know, the strangest sensation for me was that I felt like I was gaslighting myself, you know, that I was telling myself that, well, maybe they are, you know, going to, maybe Nicole's right, and maybe they will like treat us differently than these thousands of other reviews have portrayed them. Or, you know, maybe I'm just being paranoid. I think a lot of times, this is why I want to start to like zoom out of just the move, but use this as an example of what people tend to, the phases you tend to go through when you give up your power and go against your instincts, is you kind of tell yourself, maybe my perception is not accurate and maybe I am being paranoid, and you look for plausible explanations for things that don't make sense. And then I did something really crazy, which is like, after this was all said and done, I really questioned if it happened at all. Like, if we weren't just inventing that based on everybody else's stories, maybe this is just the way moves go. Maybe
right.
they do take your stuff for, you know, weeks on end, and maybe everyone's stuff comes a little bit broken and a little bit bruised. And, you know, maybe this is just an occupational hazard of moving cross country, that everything's much more expensive than one would think. So we tell ourselves stories. And I think that really goes to what people do, you know, in the TMS mindset as well.
Yeah. And I think that here's the thing, probably as in most things, the truth lies somewhere in between the two poles, meaning this is indeed many people's stories. And it is indeed the nature of such a big move. And what you're unearthing underneath it, which I think we discussed briefly, parallels women especially, or people who have dealt with sexual assault, people who have dealt with all forms of gaslighting and trauma where they have been cheated on or deceived or in one way or another scammed, that it's so easy to turn it inward and to question, you know, your own perception or your sanity, or, you know, and so it's
my fault. It's my fault for wanting to save money. It's my fault for, you know, not taking the time to research properly and get multiple quotes and talk to friends and ask them who they used. We tend to blame ourselves in these situations.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's where the lesson can inhabit both poles, because the word fault is always something that I, you know, try to get gentler about, which is like soften the word fault. I have a role here. I could have done more research. I could have gotten more quotes, but it's still not my fault. And I did not call in getting fully scammed, getting mistreated, getting bait and switched, getting lied to, you know. So I think that that's where we need to sort of hold space for the both and. That it is our responsibility to participate in our lives, but also when things happen like this, it does not help, and I don't think it's part of personal growth to sling the second arrow and turn it onto
yourself.
And
that's where I was really impressed by how you are the product of your product and what you would do at certain points that I found to be almost excruciating, so stressful, not knowing what was going to happen, having to listen to all these friends of ours, you know, kind of dramatize the situation even further and come up with, you know, rescue schemes that were going to really be even more difficult than just going
and expensive.
Yes. I thought that you did such an admirable job of stepping back and taking back your own power and not letting it rule you every day of the summer, because it really would have stolen even more of the summer.
Yeah, you know, it's true that, thank you. And that is what I am constantly preaching on this podcast, which is if you do this work for long enough and you really are able to center yourself in the presence in the moment, what happens is you realize, and this is, I talk about this a lot in my anxiety course. I talk about this a lot anytime I'm discussing anxiety or panic. If it's not happening right now, comma, it's not happening. And that is something I employed in every moment of this stress, which is, okay, does it help to pre-grieve that I might never get my things? Straight up, no, that does not help. It will send me into an absolute spiral of grief and rage and shame for myself, for my daughter, because I was responsible for her things. So, okay, throw that one out. That's not going to help. Okay, how's this? Does it help to get upset once you've done everything you can possibly do that is within your power? Once again, no. If you're paralyzed in the fetal position and you haven't done anything you need to do, yeah, it helps to be upset because you have to motivate yourself to get out of bed and do what you need to do. But Lisa and I made every appropriate phone call, did get the counsel of intelligent and resourceful friends who, at the very least, even though these emergency measures weren't necessary, we knew that we could take them if we absolutely had to. Yeah. And we, you know, called the company and we did everything that we could possibly do. But when you get to the end of the day and you have actually done all the next right considered action, does it help to be up all night about that? Does it help to pre-grieve? Does it help? And the answer I find is no.
Right. It's the Byron Katie. It's the, you know, that we are disturbed not by what happens to us, but by our thoughts about what has happened.
Yes. Yeah. Byron Katie also says you can argue with reality, but you only lose 100% of the time.
Yes.
Another one of my favorite quotes of hers. So yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, and that was the posture I held myself in for the whole summer, because it wasn't going to help me to become unhinged about this.
Yeah, and I think that that is sort of what took us into the final chapter of it, was that spirit that whatever is going to happen is going to happen. We can either, drag our bags, our heavy, heavy baggage, to
With
get
us on the journey.
right with us on the journey, or we can, sort of know that we're learning a lesson, and this too shall pass, and it will be resolved one way or the other, and we're going where we're going no matter what. So all we can do is either make this even more uncomfortable for ourselves, or we can try to take it with grace. And I think that's, there's a lot of lesson in it
There
that for
is. I mean,
people.
that particular point can really become ubiquitous for almost any stressful situation that you're in, which is, have you done the next right considered action? Have you done your best to learn from the moment and know that you are not going to repeat whatever you repeated? And this applies to relationships. It applies to parenting. It applies to work situations where maybe you didn't draw a boundary and took on an extra project that you should have known, that you did know you couldn't handle. And now, of course, you're getting hate and shade from people who are like, why aren't you finished? I mean, there's so many examples where this can touch into life. And so to me, it's like, okay, here you are, right? Wherever you go, there you are. And here you are. And you have the situation that you have called in. So you're not a victim and it is upon you. So there are two factors. There are do the next right considered action. You can't do more than you can do anyway. And then learn for the next time that this is not something that you want to get involved in again.
Right. Learn to listen to your instincts. And, for me, I always look at things through the lens of relationships. But for me, a pattern had always been that I would go against my instinct and stay in something long past the time that I felt very strongly, the things were not working.
Right.
And I'd allowed some need or some perceived need. Because when you break down need, we don't need what we think we need, but we let this like false sense of security or that we get from feeling that that false need is being met override our instincts. And so in looking at this situation, even while it was happening, even while we were still in the middle of it, I felt sure that we were learning something that was going to enable us to have a different reaction than we might have had in the past, based on using the tools
Yeah.
that we share here in this community. And that through this experience, we would, even if it felt like we were doing something that we had done before, that, that life is always, it's endless. We know it's cyclical. We're always going to encounter adversity. We're always going to, have people that are going to be trying to, perpetrate scams. We're always going to have, disappointing things happen. But we don't have to react to them the same way. And in that way, we do ascend. We feel ourselves to be in the same place, but we're actually three rungs higher up the mountain. And that this act of ascension has to do with a destination that is within us. It's not an external destination, that our journey is always about going within, using our tools to come closer to our essential nature, which is aligned with our instincts and our internal compass, and that our bodies and our brains do seek balance.
Absolutely. And I think that, if we're to pose the question, why do we not follow our instincts? That's when, your journal speak practice can really help you. Because, I know several times within the course of this summer, we both sat down to journal speak. And, it's always nice to have an accountability buddy.
Yes.
We set the timer, we go in separate rooms, so we have our energetic space, and we really examine. And I know that one of the things I found myself examining is in a kind, gentle way, because in the moment of a bad decision, it's never a kind, gentle voice that comes into your mind, but in a kind, gentle way in my journal speak, in a way that I might hold my inner child saying, okay, all right. So what's done is done. Here we are. We're in purgatory. We don't know how it's going to end. It's very stressful. Why, Nicole? Why were you not able to listen to your intuition? What made you sort of spiritually bypass the things that you quote unquote, should have known, and examine that. And that is the recipe for real substantive change and transformation in your life, to look underneath why you might have done something, and instead of just shit on yourself for it, to be curious. As we always say, replace your fear with curiosity and look, and take the time in a journal speak practice to look in that slow way. When you're having to take the time to put either fingers to keyboard or pen to paper, that it takes to write things down. And I was just saying to Lisa before we hopped on air that I've already made 2 or 3 very important decisions since I've been in California that I would have made far more sloppily and without thought had I not had this experience of the move.
Yes. Yes. I think it's that. I mean, there's always like tactical things that can change. We can do more research. We can, you know, ask for more references. But I think that the real lessons come from digging more deeply into why we do the things that we do.
Yeah.
I wonder if you have any like sort of insight into that. I can certainly.
You mean like why I do the things that I do?
Yes. Why when we override our instincts, are we doing that? Why do we give our power away to the medical model when we do? Why is it easier to take a pill and believe that's going to work, or fill out a chart of the doctor and give and tell them everything about us and imagine that they know then from our filling in a chart more about our bodies than we instinctively actually do? Why do we give away our power?
I mean, when you say that, the first thing that comes to my mind is because we're frightened that if we hold on to our power, we'll fail. That we won't be able to, that we don't have the tenacity or the capability, or somehow we are more damaged or more traumatized than the next one that had some success. And it's terrifying to be at the helm of your own boat, you know, even though we quote unquote want to be, it's terrifying. And I think that that's why I gave away my power, you know, in this situation without too much research, because I just felt like, you know, who am I to make a better decision? This will be fine. And that is something that I, in many ways, people come on the podcast and they say they're grateful for the pain. And everyone who says they're grateful for the pain, which is literally, I think almost, if not every person I've ever interviewed in all these years, says, the first time I ever heard someone say they were grateful for the pain, I was listening to this podcast and I thought, that will never be me. I will never say I'm grateful for being bedbound or having been on disability for years, or, you know, whatever has been the effect of your chronic pain situation. And then they come on the podcast and they say, I can't believe I'm about to say this. I'm grateful for the pain. And I have to say, in a very similar fashion, I am grateful for every moment of stress of this move, because I did take the time to look at myself and understand why I give away my power in certain areas of my life. And I know that as a result of this experience, I will not be doing that anymore.
Yeah.
How does it resonate for you? You said you had an idea.
I mean, I think sometimes, even though we say that what we are teaching people is simple, it's not always easy, I do think that the tool that we offer of journal speak and truth seeking and going inward rather than seeking external solutions and saviors and safety in others it's free, but it does not come without an investment.
Yes.
And to take the time to really, really deeply know yourself and get under the reasons why you do things and to really confront your truths, your personal truths, is challenging. Looking at the truth it's hard to face why we do the things that we do, you know, why we do the things we do because of shame, because of laziness, because of all of these, you know, things that are deemed to be, we talked about it with Elise Lunin last week, sinful, like,
yes,
that, you know, it's to be gluttonous, to be lazy, to be slothful. All of those things are considered to be paths to avoid. But the more that we see them as no bad parts, as all part of our essential human nature,
mm-hmm,
and we understand why we do the things we do, then we can really live with ourselves, and we're not I think of this line in the Michael J. Fox documentary that we saw still, where he says he was in a knife fight in a closet. He felt like he was in a knife fight in a closet. And the director said, who was the knife fight with? And he said, with truth.
Right, right.
And I think when we can take the combative relationship out of our relationship to truth and make it, you know, our bedfellow and accept our nature and why we do the things we do and get more comfortable with our instinct and our internal compass and how it leads us always in the right direction when we're at one with it, then I think that we can make decisions that honor that.
Yes. And actually, when you say that, what it makes me think of is something I say often, which is doing this work gives you choices, and choices mean that you are free, because the definition of enslavement is that you have no choice, that, you know, something is being imposed upon you and you have to act within it. And choices mean that you are free. It doesn't mean that life is grand all the time. It means that you get to make choices in your life. And in the end, regardless of the terror that can accompany the agency required to heal, it's also the only place to live completely free. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what you're getting here with what we're talking about every week. It's like we're handing you the opportunity to do some really hard work that will lead to a life of limitless possibilities. And it's like, sign me up.
Yes, yes. I think that's a great place to leave off.
All right. So in the spirit of just a little bit of a PSA, I really don't think that this detail is going to matter to too many people, but I can't.
They probably operate under so many different names.
I'm sure. I can't. I just want to say a few things. If you indeed are a person that is going to move house, the companies that I used, the broker was Relocation Nation, and the mover was Luxury Van Lines, is not a luxury. The only reason I'm saying their names is because if by any chance one of you, literally one person of the many thousands that will hear this podcast, might have just about to been click purchase for, you know, whatever on either of those places, please do not. But more than anything, be informed. And if indeed you are moving or whatever, however this could apply to your life situation, ask all the questions. Ask, are you a broker? Or are you a broker and a mover? Are you a mover? Are you going to load my stuff at my house and actually take that truck and drive it to location? And if not, how does it work? What are my guarantees? You know, like, is it possible that it sits in a warehouse for a month while they find a driver? You know, ask questions. Don't be shy. It actually reminds me of...
Don't bury your head in the sand when things are hard. And you know more than you think you know.
And you know more if you're willing to ask questions too. And just one last thing, it reminds me of, so Georgia Hardstark is a personal friend and a fan of this podcast. And she-
My favorite murder.
And so she and Karen on My Favorite Murder have mentioned this podcast several times. So I know a whole bunch of you that are fans of this podcast are murderinos. And one of the places that this message aligns with the My Favorite Murder brand is that I know that Georgia and Karen make things funny, and I know that they are also obviously talking about murders, which are tragic. But one thing that I love about the podcast is it's sort of like also about empowerment, especially female empowerment, because the podcast is about, My Favorite Murder is about, you know, don't go into the woods. Don't go into the elevator if you think that the person in the elevator, even if you're embarrassed, if you feel that the person in the elevator doesn't, you know, makes you feel uneasy, you know, don't get in the car and go to a second location. Like, you know yourself. And honestly, that's a bit of
follow
what we're saying.
Follow your instincts. Yeah. Don't create stories that prove something that wins out over what you know.
Yes.
Deeply within.
Give yourself that chance, because that is very, very important. And I hope that you can take a moment, whomever you are, and reflect on what we're saying, because it is, yes, it's a personal story, but it's really, truly a human story and a story that any of us could benefit from just being a little reflective on. So anyway, Lisa, thank you for living through this with me. She was such an incredible support. I mean, it's really something to have a partner where immediately upon having some sort of personal tragedy, the conversation went from it's happening to you to it's happening to us.
Yes. Well, I truly mean it when I say that I was watching and thinking, I really hope that I can meet my next huge challenge with that much grace and perspective and use of the tools and the answer and the pause and the stay and the,
yeah,
all of it. So we love you all.
All right. Well, thank you, babe, for saying that. And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. I hope this gave you some little bit to reflect on in your own life. And as always, until next week, this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs, and my partner, Lisa Eisenpresser. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.